Welcome to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Here are your hosts, Daniel Meyer and Chris Tatro.
Welcome back to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Tonight is a special podcast that we've got going. And not only are we entering our fifth year anniversary, but we also have Les Albert and Tyler Modlin on with us. We had Les on last week on the podcast, so you guys should all know Les and his story, what he's done for HHO, what he's done, you know, in his personal and professional career. And then Tyler, he's one of our North Dakota field staff. He's been with us for quite a few years now. We're gonna have Tyler introduce himself, and then we've got some pretty exciting news for you guys. So make sure that you stay tuned and listen to this whole podcast. So Tyler, he served with the Minnesota National Guard, actually with Chris. And then from there, he did law enforcement. His law enforcement experience is pretty unique. Not really anything that you hear too much about. And then also he's worked for many different volunteer fire departments as he's moved around. So Tyler, it's good to have you on. If you want to introduce yourself to all of our listeners.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. My name is Tyler. I work for North Dakota State Parks. Like Chris, we both kind of do the same job of enforcing rules and regulations when it comes to hunting, fishing, stuff like that. In North Dakota, we are two separate organizations compared to like Minnesota or Colorado, where it's Parks and Wildlife or DNR. So we kind of do both. On the weekends, we manage a little city and all of our state parks. We got 13 here in North Dakota. I got a great office, about 1,000 acres, and it kind of gets a little weird at times. You know, Chris can attest to that with 4th of July, Memorial Day, you know, your big 3-day weekends. But yeah, when I started at Fort Stevenson State Park, I joined Garrison Fire Department, was on that. When I moved to Fort Ransom State Park, I joined Fort Ransom and Valley City Fire. So that's my background.
And what'd you do in the Minnesota National Guard?
Well, I was infantry. I was with ACO 2 of the 136, and Chris, if I remember right, you said you were Charlie 2 of the 136, right?
Yep. Well, yes, correct. Yeah.
Chris was the tanker that never did tank things.
Pretty much. Yeah, that was the entirety of my career.
And then Tyler, married, got any kids?
Happily married with 5 boys that'll tear up a front yard playing football.
Perfect. Not quite as big as a family that Chris has, but 5 boys is a lot to handle, that's for sure. And then what got you involved with HHO?
Honestly, I just saw the Facebook post that would have been back in, 2017, 2018, and thought, getting veterans and law enforcement outdoors, I can get behind that and support it 100%. And so, yeah, been with you guys ever since.
Yeah, it's been, you know, we got started in 2017. So you've been around since just about the beginning. I think you were one of the first couple of people that came on over there in North Dakota. So you've kind of seen the organization and North Dakota grow into what it is.
Absolutely.
And then as a reminder for everyone else, you know, we've got Les on here too. Les is a veteran of the Marine Corps. He did some law enforcement stuff as well. And then did the firefighter thing as well. And following in the family footsteps.
Yeah. And Les was on the last podcast. And I know this one's going to air on October 7th, which is the start of our fifth year. And Les was on the very last one that we had published as well. So did we want to have Les do a quick little introduction again?
Or do you Les, you want to do a quick reminder of what you've done, where you come from?
Yeah, I was in the Marine Corps, like you just said. After I got out of the Marine Corps, I was a deputy sheriff in Henry County, Florida for a couple years, and then I had to move back home to Illinois, where I went back in the family business of being a firefighter. So I was a career firefighter for several years there. And then when I moved up here to Minnesota, I was actually a chief for one of the fire departments around here for a while. While I was working at U.S. Steel, just got too busy with working at U.S. Steel. So I stepped down so other people can have the opportunities to be a chief and everything. So here I am.
Little jack of all trades, doing different professions, learning the different ins and outs. It's interesting to be able to wear a few different hats and see the different dynamics when it comes between military service, law enforcement. I've never had the fire hat, but I've seen some of it with the red card type side of things when it comes to wildland fire. So not 100% the same, but I mean, there's some similarities there. So pretty colorful career.
Yeah, I was did wildland firefighting up here when I became chief also. It was like, if I'm going to be running the show, I better know what I'm doing. So I'd rather run into a burning building any day of the week over playing in the woods when it's on fire.
Those things can creep up on you and move fast.
Pretty unpredictable with the wildland fire.
Yep, it can change on you in a moment's notice.
I got a lot of respect for all firefighters, but at the same time with, you know, wildland, the amount of physical exertion that's involved with a lot of these crews and what they do, it's pretty impressive to see what kind of physical fitness standards. I mean, all firefighters at some point have something to some extent, but the wildland fire crews with the red cards, you know, there's some testing that they have to do, but once they get in the fire, the amount of work that they put in with the lack of sleep, you know, they're usually 16-hour days and 8 hours off and then back at it the next day.
Yes, sir.
And then before we get into, you know, talking about the struggles that each, you know, kind of group that we serve has, Tyler, what's your go-to outdoors thing, you know, fishing for walleye, bass, hunting? What's your thing that you do?
Well, in North Dakota, we kind of have a long season of ice fishing, so it's always ice fishing. And then in the fall here, we open up August 15th for early goose, so you're starting to smack some geese around in August, and then we open up to duck season. So, yeah, it's year-round out here. That's why I moved out here. This is a great state, and we got ample fishing opportunities, and, yeah, just fishing, hunting, whatever season's open, that's what I'm doing.
So just got kind of a jack of all trades, along with the professional thing and the outdoors. You do a little bit of it all.
Correct. Yep.
Have you got any memorable hunting or fishing stories?
Well, that's where Les and I met. We were doing the Devil's Lake trip, and I hosted Les in my ice house, and we got to meet. And yeah, I guess my most memorable HHO one would have been last year at the Devil's Lake trip, where a storm rolled in. We were able to get the members off the ice, but us ice house guys were stuck out there for about another 2 days.
I remember Jeff talking about that.
Yeah, I remember that was a pretty big deal, but you guys made the best of it.
Yep. We had a great volunteer that comes out of Wisconsin every year out here. And we all kind of shut down everyone else's house and just backfilled into his place and stayed there for another 2 days. And we were lucky enough that the weather broke just a little bit. We were able to get the members off and off the lake and heading home. And yeah, it was definitely a trip to remember.
You had whiteout conditions during that, didn't you?
Oh, we couldn't even see Jeff's truck that was 15, 20 feet away from the ice house window at times.
That's crazy. Yeah,
it was
a lot of wind.
It was windy.
Always kind of a struggle too with when the wind gets like that and it gets super cold, trying to ensure that your fish house is going to ensure that it's heated properly as well. So I'm sure there was some, you know, instances where you guys were potentially a little bit concerned, but at the same time felt pretty comfortable.
Right. That's why we shut down everyone else's house, that if we had to grab propane tanks off of the non-used houses, and the volunteer had a 26 or 28 foot ice castle, so it could accommodate the four of us that stayed out there. And so, yeah, our contingency plan was to use the other propane bottles if, you know, the house we were in ran out or whatnot.
I think that's a good thing to note too, you know, for especially with ice fishing coming up for the Midwest is, you know, always be prepared for the weather to change quickly or, you know, it not to go as planned. Always have a plan in place to be safe and get off the ice as quickly as possible or have the resources there to be able to hunker down for a few extra days.
Prepare to self-evac.
Yeah. And then outside of, you know, HHO stuff, Tyler, I'm not sure how much you want to talk about it. And if you don't, just tell me that you don't. But over the last few years, you've kind of gone through some personal struggles as well. And while maintaining, you know, your volunteer stuff with HHO, your careers and everything else. Is that something that you want to talk about?
Yep, I got no problem talking about that. What do you want to know?
So what year was it that it all started? And what was it?
I had a mass growing on my neck, and the summer of 2020 that had restriction on the lungs and all that, and you know that was in the midst of COVID, so I thought I had bronchitis, and I tried to do, you know, one of those FaceTime things with a doctor, because if you had a cough you couldn't come in, and this mass kept growing on my neck, and I finally lied and said I don't have a cough, and then they could see me and went in and was diagnosed with stage 2B Hodgkin lymphoma. Went through 12 rounds of chemo and kicked its ass. It was all over the heart, lungs. It was all over the central chest and then up on the neck there. And not being political, but, you know, I think it was directly towards the burn pits when I was in Iraq from 05 to 07. And with Biden passing this recent bill, I'm going to have the VA reevaluate it for disability. But, you know, in my unit, a lot of us came home. I'm the first one to get cancer, but a lot of them came home and a couple of years later get the asthma, the COPD, and respiratory issues. So I don't think I'm too far off.
No. And, you know, I'd say there's quite a few things that can come up from the things that we smell and burn around us.
No, man, the burn pits, and everyone was right in the middle of it most time. Even if you weren't directly walking through it, that burn pit smoke was settling on your base or your fob or wherever you were. But even if you're outside of the base, everything, there was fires consistently everywhere, and there's no way it was good for anyone.
Absolutely. We were started up at El Tecatum. We were up there for a couple months, and we came down to Camp Liberty. And yeah, I mean, it wasn't a nice place. I'll definitely not go back and visit. I know my dad's a Vietnam vet, and he just 2 years ago went back to Vietnam with 10 of his buddies to kind of work their stuff out. And I, hands off to him, that I would never go back to Iraq and want to, yeah, ever see that again.
Yeah, a different place. You know, I went to Bosnia. Did you do the Bosnia deployment too, Tyler?
No, my unit was in Kosovo when I first enlisted in 03. So okay. They were Kosovo.
I mean, like Bosnia, I'd go back and check out, you know, go hit Croatia. There's a lot of interesting history there, you know, and things that I would like to go see. But Iraq's not exactly on my to-do list for a welcome back visit type situation.
You're not trying to go see what it's turned into since
now. I'm sure it still looks like a desert and hasn't changed much.
Exactly.
But that's quite the hurdle to get through with that. Did you have pretty good support with all that situation with your the lymphoma?
Yeah. Rocksteady wife, she came to all 12 treatments and then the follow-ups and all that, the PET scans and yep. No, and that's the biggest thing. I mean, if anyone's dealing with that, just remember, I mean, with anything, whether it's your mental health or your cancer or whatever you're dealing with, just one day at a time. And just take it as it comes, and it's just one day at a time.
I think that's the biggest thing with anything, you know, like you said, your physical or mental health is, you know, people see this huge obstacle, and, you know, the news of having cancer comes your way, and you're going to think, man, I've got this huge obstacle I've got to overcome. But taking it one day at a time, you know, setting small goals for yourself is key. Otherwise everyone gets overwhelmed and kind of shuts down, like what we talked about last week.
Well, so Tyler, do you have anything else you want to ask? You just unmuted.
Nope.
Okay. Well, how about Les? Les, let's switch over to you. Your go-to outdoor activity.
Well, my go-to outdoor activity is anything outdoors, hunting, fishing wise, but I'd say probably when my kids would go out fishing with me before they became teenagers and dads are not cool anymore, was always crappie fishing. Right. And now it's the last couple of years I really liked getting into ice fishing more and stuff, and it's, I like sitting out there and, you know, chilling with the guys kind of thing, and sitting in the ice castle. It's got a little bit of luxury while you're out there not freezing your butt off, so I like doing that a lot. And then I'd say probably my favorite would have to be duck hunting, probably.
Oh, that is not my favorite, so good for you.
have you got out at all yet this year?
Well, we did a little staff trip kind of per se down at Chaffee's place for goose hunting. So he had 90 to 100 geese sitting in his field, except for the day that we went. So
of course, that's how it works, right?
Yeah, should have been there yesterday kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's still good, though, to get together with everyone and be able to exchange stories and spend that time together.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You gotta cross over the state lines and get in North Dakota. I hear they love out-of-state people coming to hunt over in North Dakota.
No, me and Tyler's talked about it a few times. We just never really connected yet with it.
We will.
Got plenty of season left yet.
Are you more of a field hunter when it comes to waterfowl, or do you like getting in the swamps with the waders on?
Well, when I was growing up in Illinois, duck hunting and everything, it was always in the boat, or they actually have the old, what you call the old pill boxes and stuff in the rivers and stuff that you can hunt out of. But 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I went out to the west side of the state and got into some field hunting. And I was like, so I don't have to go traipsing through the water. I just lay here. The dog goes to get the stuff. So yeah, I like the dry fields is a lot better, but I'll do either one.
Man, there's something for me about, I mean, I'll get up early and go deer hunting. That's fine. You know, like crawling to a stand or getting into a box blind, whatever. I don't know, something about getting up at 2 or 3 or even spend the night out there and the rice paddies and all the bugs coming out and trying to kill you, you know, like it's just too much for me. It's not my thing. I mean, I obviously go out and work it and meet some good people, but once I'm finally out there and the sun comes up, it's a lot of fun to go see people and everyone's smiling and getting their ducks and having a good time.
I think the best thing about duck hunting is, you know, especially if you're sitting in a blind with a bunch of people, is being able to, you know, have a conversation. And, you know, like we go out to pit properties quite a bit. And like those guys are cooking breakfast for you with like bacon, eggs, everything else.
I would go to that.
You get the luxury side of it where you don't have to worry about, you know, hey, is this deer going to smell this bacon I'm cooking?
And then I can take a nap and everyone else can shoot, and maybe I'll nap a little bit more and then maybe shoot occasionally. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Some of the best sunrises I've seen are sitting early season in late August, early September in a wheat field and just watching that sun come up. Those are some of the most memorable things I'll walk away from with early goose and duck hunting.
Yep, definitely.
I remember one of the very first, you know, it was kind of like our brainstorming HHO trip with, you know, all of us founders up in Baudette, Minnesota. It was September, October, and we had a pretty small boat that we were going out hunting with. And there was four of us that loaded up in this thing, and it was just to the point where like the little channel was starting to freeze, and we all loaded up in this thing and took off, put too many people and too much gear in this boat, and quickly realized that we had to turn around before this thing sank. And it was probably what, 3 o'clock in the morning, late.
Yeah,
late
we had to shuttle people back and forth. Which, I mean, I think the safety side of things, everything was fine. It's just that we didn't anticipate the wind to be where it was and making the waves that it did. That's what made it a little more sketchy. But just, no, there were some ducks that were shot that day. It was a good time.
Yeah, we had quite a few ducks that were shot. I think that was Tony's like first trip duck hunting. Now that man spent way too much money.
Yeah,
the hobby.
He's on the sick of train. No, yeah, Tony's definitely hooked. You know, and kind of a cool part is for people that follow us, you know, Tony is super into the waterfowl now. And yesterday they ended up getting 3 snow geese during their hunt, which is pretty unique for this time of year in central Minnesota area. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I think, you know, over the last few years, there's been plenty of memorable trips, you know, that our field staff have hosted throughout every state that we've been in. I think each state kind of has, you know, their one or two trips that they do every year that you can't really do anywhere else other than there. Like New Hampshire, you guys just got back from doing the moose hunt over there.
Yeah, up in Maine, that was a good time.
The New England area, North Dakota, you guys have, you know, the amazing sloughs that you can fish out of, especially ice fishing season. And then Minnesota, you guys have the world class ice or walleye fishing, and then, you know, up there on the Lake of the Woods area, you can't fish anywhere like that in the country.
What?
So my no, it was my mess. Oh, I've got my Facebook open, so it's just dinging away. Okay.
So leading into the next subject here and why we're all here for this podcast, you know, we got the introductions, a little bit of BS in here, but biggest thing that we want to discuss during this podcast is, as we're going into our 5th year anniversary here, to start moving forward, over the past couple of years, we've had discussion regarding expansion and what we're going to do if we do decide to expand. And we saw a need for individuals that were also first responders to come into the wing of our mission, be able to share our experiences and our mental health support for others. And the big thing that we had discussed over the years as the board was to ensure that everything was in the right place at the right time. That includes understanding how nonprofits fully operate, and I think that we're doing a pretty good job. But at the same time, there's always something new that we're always trying to pick up and move forward with, ensuring that we got through the trials and tribulations. You know, there are hiccups, you know, and not every day is, you know, sunshine and rainbows. There are difficulties that do occur. And we wanted to ensure, most importantly, that our mission was being met when it came to, you know, currently serving military veterans and law enforcement. So ensuring that we knew what we were doing and we're operating right, and it was consistent. And with that conversation over the past couple of years, you know, there's been tons of research that's done about different professions and what the next step would be.
Yeah. And a lot of the research has revolved around, you know, not only, you know, just going on Google, but a lot of it's been, you know, reaching out to people in those fields and getting their personal, you know, experiences and their, you know, gauging their feeling towards there being a need for it.
Well, and the biggest part too is, you know, we want to take on one profession at a time to ensure that we understand their needs and move forward with that. And as we did our research and talked to these other individuals, to include Les and Tyler, you know, it gave us a more broad view regarding what individuals go through in these other professions. And in the first responder realm, we found that it was incredibly important to go expand into fire and EMS. And the reason why we are going in that direction is fire and EMS both wear the same hat a lot of the time. So, you know, one more caters towards the medical side, one with fire, but at the same time, a lot of fire are cross-trained in EMS. And we felt that it was important for both of them to come out at the same time, because a lot of them do both. And a lot of these individuals that are outstate areas may wear both hats, fire and EMS. So that's the big news that we are revealing at this point. You know, the research went through with a lot of different people across the U.S. when it came to the dynamics and the training that EMS and fire both have to create a standard of what we're going to begin to serve in HHO. And what we came up with through discussion was that firefighter level one and above would also be part of our bylaws, and then also EMT level one and above. And just the first responder side of things. So the individuals who are boots on the ground right away when an incident's occurring. Not that we do not have any respect for the other first responders. It's just we can only take a piece of pie at once instead of eating the whole thing. That is for discussion that we'll have at a later time. But like we just did with military service members, veterans, and law enforcement, we want to ensure that we understand the dynamics and the transition that we have, not only to serve the people that we had within our mission already, but also the new and upcoming ones.
And and it's also important to note that there's, you know, the mission of HHO doesn't change at all with this expansion. The only thing that changes is who we're serving. You know, we're still focused on getting all military veterans, law enforcement officers, fire, and now fire and EMS into the outdoors in some capacity, whether that's hunting, fishing, camping, you name it. That's still what our goal is.
So and it's the mental health piece. You know, yep. We see a lot of individuals that are fire and EMS that get confronted with some very traumatic situations that do affect them, you know, in their personal life when it comes to mental health. You know, and I just go back to thinking about what happened here in Minnesota a couple years back and watching some of these EMS and fire individuals, how they were treated, and trying to help people, and watching EMS wear literally bulletproof, you know, jackets while they are out trying to help people in the public. I mean, that's a pretty big thing. And it's very important for us to ensure that, you know, they're able to receive these trips as well. And also, I guess the term is cross-pollinate with other individuals who have similar situations and mental health issues in order to ensure that they're going to be helped and their mental health situations are going to be more assisted by the individuals and what we can provide when it comes to these trips.
Yeah. And this expansion isn't something that came easier, you know, on a last minute decision. It's been a discussion that we've had for over 2 years now. And we voted this in our August meeting for this expansion. And, you know, after years of discussion with people like Les and Tyler and many others, you know, it's going to be great having this addition into the organization. And going back into, you know, a conversation at the beginning of this podcast, talking about, you know, the trials that fire and EMS go through, you know, Les said, you know, he would never want to be one of those wildland firefighters facing the things that they face. So I'm not sure if you mentioned it, Chris, but you know, the fire side of it includes those as well. The people with the red card,
Yeah, I have the list right here of who it does include when it comes to red card. You know, red card wildland firefighters that are hand crew, engine crews, fuel, hotshot crews, helitac, smoke jumpers, and fire module.
Yeah, so you know, all the people that are out there doing everything, and you know, I can't really speak on the fire and EMS side of it. I know Les and Tyler, and then you, Chris, you've got the wildland experience from when you go out and assist with those guys. Do either Les or Tyler, you guys want to kind of touch on some of the struggles that fire and EMS, you know, face in their everyday profession?
Les, you want to go first or?
No, you can go ahead and start it out if you want. No big deal. I can touch up what you have left.
You know, for me, I'm not an EMT, I'm an EMR, which is a step below, but I have, you know, structure, wildland, law enforcement, and military. All four things will give you an experience that at times you don't want to remember, you don't want to take home. That on an incident on the side of the highway, you're going to have law enforcement, fire, and EMS. And I have been, talked with my state director over the years of, we should really think of fire and EMS. That we all see things we wish we could forget, but on the flip side, we do it for a reason, and that is to help others that cannot help themselves. That if you want, I can go, I have no problem talking about it, going to some of the horror stories, but
you can go as deep as you want to go, Tyler.
I can honestly tell you, having a ceiling collapse on top of you and trap you inside a bathtub is just as scary as doing a patrol down Main Street, Baghdad. Been there, done both. Holding someone's skull together after they've been T-boned is just as traumatic and sears into your memory as pretty much anything you did in the military. That I'm so glad HHO has decided to allow these other two branches to join us. That, like I said, we have an interstate here, and so we're constantly called out in the winter for rollovers and all that. And, having the auto extrication, having the hazardous, having structure, having wildland, jack of all trades, masters of none. I'm proud of my department here in Valley City that we are highly trained. Fort Ransom, we are highly trained. And out in these rural areas, the shittiest part is the person. It's not like in a large metropolis where you don't know him. No, you know your patient. And that's the hardest part when it comes to a rural setting or a volunteer department.
And I'll piggyback on that a little bit, with that side of things. My two hardest calls I ever went to, were the death of two of my friends, being first to one of them and second to another, and watching them die in front of me. That very difficult. But at the same time, like to touch on what you had brought up with them being people is even if you don't know them, this is our backyard, this is our home, this is where we go to relax and decompress, and not taken away from any military experiences anywhere at all. But when you're overseas, you're in it and you're in it. Like you, that's it. When you're here, you have to pull off that uniform and potentially go to a family function, and you have to figure out how to turn it off. And you can't. It's just how it goes. You just watch your friend die, or someone that you know really well, or even nobody that you even know. It was a very high intense situation. Trauma happened, and your brain has it on repeat for a long time. And you're supposed to be able to function normally at these family events, friends events, whatever it might be. And it's just hard to turn it off, and sometimes impossible. So it takes time for you to be able to cope with that situation and move through that situation. Your backyard. That's the biggest thing I keep telling people. This is our backyard. This is different. This is completely different world.
And I think with that too, with the military side of things, you're at 100 for, 365 days or however many months of deployment you have. And then with the law enforcement, the fire and EMS side of things, you're every day that you go to work, you're at zero hoping nothing happens. And then you hit 100 because you get a call, whether that be, a call with law enforcement where you've got to draw your weapon, or fire where you've got to rush into a building, EMS, like Tyler said, hold someone's skull together. And then you've got to bring that back down so quick back to, hey, I've got to go de-escalate a situation where someone's having a mental health issue and be the good guy here.
Yeah. And a lot of times, like you were just saying, Dan, you're at this call and you 100 miles an hour, adrenaline's pumping, and you need that time to de-escalate. And a lot of times you don't get that because you're going right to the next call, it'd be call after call after call. And a lot of times they are people that sometimes they're not, but say even on EMS calls where we were working, somebody doing CPR on them, their family's there watching you try your best to bring them back. And a lot of times that just doesn't work. And then that kind of sits on you also, you know, what could we have done better, you know, or along those lines. And so.
And you try to build that wall for separation, and some people can, but it affects everyone. And even if they do have that wall, it's all compartmentalized somewhere, and it's going to come to the surface at some point. And who knows when it's going to rear its ugly head, but that it's there.
Yeah. I think building that wall is, you know, I mean, probably one of the most helpful things, but also like the most hurtful thing as well for the individuals that put the wall up and try to compartmentalize everything and not talk about it. You know, whether that be with their significant other or friends that might not know the same experiences, which is why organizations like HHO and the many others out there are important, because it's an outlet to connect with people that have experienced those same things. And you don't feel like you're going to get judged because you talk about things that you do or like how you react to certain situations.
Les, I know you talked a little bit about, you know, your experience to some extent with, you know, fire EMS and law enforcement, but you know, you and Tyler were both part of a working group when we got this, when we did the vote. You know, our board was like, you know what, we're going to get a working group together to ensure that, you know, we got this passed at this point. How are we going to find these requirements of who we're going to serve? And based on your experiences and why we're at the level we are, could you explain a little bit about the working group and what we had for conversations?
Yeah, so we had the working group, like myself, Tyler, myself, and a few other people across the United States. But we know that everybody that's involved in fire and EMS, just like law enforcement and military, they're, you know, they've all got certain trainings, but we had to figure out what would best suit us for a learning curve for us to see what we can do. Like where I came from in Illinois, any department pretty much has to have a firefighter 2 level. There's a few states like Texas, Florida, ourselves, New York. Our standards were a lot higher than everybody else, so we had to kind of bring that down a notch, because not everybody is a paid department, obviously. There's volunteers everywhere that have everyday lives that, you know, don't have the opportunities that we do. And then going with the firefighter level 1, you know, you're getting all the training even a career firefighter will get. It's just not as many hours, I should say, as what you'd have to put into for going to a different level. And then same with EMS, you know, EMTA, you can work the ambulances, you know, or I shouldn't say an EMTA, sorry, I'm going way back in time. Yeah, EMT basic.
Fucking dinosaur language now, man.
Sorry. But the EMT basic, you know, you're working the ambulances quite a bit. Not saying the first responders don't work ambulances, but they're just not doing it as an everyday basis with the EMTs. There's a little bit more training that goes in hand with the EMT basics, obviously. And then wildland along those lines is, you know, they see pretty much everything once they get that red card where they get the S-120s and the 160s and everything along those lines. So we had to kind of make it a group effort to figure out what we wanted to start out with. And I think we all came together pretty well. We asked a lot of questions, and it was mainly what state does this, what state does that, and then kind of work through that together. I can't remember all the questions that we went through, but.
And I think, you know, because there's probably going to be a lot of questions why we chose EMT basic as being the base level for that. I think a lot of people don't understand, you know, the EMT basic or EMT level 1 are the people that are typically responding to the calls, you know, more so than the paramedics and everything. The paramedics are kind of the ones that come, especially in smaller communities. The paramedics are the ones that come from the county and you know, the larger cities to assist when the EMT level 1 or basic, you know, doesn't have the resources or the equipment needed for whatever life-saving measures that they're trying to complete.
Yeah, there's a lot of hours that go from a lot of hours difference wise, I should say, from being a first responder going into your EMT basics. And then, you know, all the way up into your paramedics, there's a lot of hours that are different in between them. So.
And paramedics aren't necessarily on ambulances every time an ambulance shows up, right?
Right. You can have a BLS crew, which would be basic life support, which could be your EMT basics and everything. And then you'll have an ALS unit, which is your advanced life support, which they'll have at least one paramedic on one of those rigs.
And they are usually able to administer drugs and stuff like that, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, you know, we wanted to ensure that we were touching the individuals who were first on scene, because they're going through just as much as some other people. And, you know, paramedics definitely are in it too, you know, but in some, you know, outstate areas, they may not necessarily be the first one right there. So discussion was had on that. And actually it led to the fire piece with Tyler. You know, Tyler, we discussed with at depth with the fire level two, because there was a push for fire two within our discussion and working group. And Tyler's dynamics in North Dakota is different. Tyler, do you want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah. So I love the fire service. You know, Les is a number firefighter two. I'm a firefighter one. In the rural area of North Dakota, unfortunately, it's usually, you know, the local guy that can get to the hole first, or lack of a better term, the first one to run out of the bar to get to the fire hall in the small towns. And then once you start getting in the bigger cities in North Dakota, you know, Valley City, Jamestown, Grand Forks, Fargo, you know, Fargo and Grand Forks, they're full time. Valley City, Jamestown, and Minot Rural, they're volunteers, but we're still required to maintain a certain amount of hours of training. So I think, you know, across the nation, that these very rural areas, it's unfortunately the first guy out of the bar or the first one down to the fire hall. But other municipalities, they have more training. And for us, you know, firefighter one is required along with your hazmat. And then for us, you know, we got the auto extrication because we got the interstate and hazmat to get on the rescue squad. And we also have a dive team. So, I mean, that takes hours too. But with this committee, we really decided that, all right, we're not going to cater to the guy that gets maybe 1 to 2 calls a year of a barn burning down and all that. We're going to look for the guys that have a higher call ratio. And, you know, like for me, I average a call every 2.8 days as a volunteer. But yeah, talking with Les and talking with this committee, it was clear that, yeah, we really need to go with the firefighter one. And then with the wildland guys, you know, like Chris said, they're out busting their ass, holding a fire line, whether they got the Pulaski or the McLeod. I mean, they're
even spike camps.
Right. I mean, they're working their ass off.
And so, literally helicopters dropping food and equipment off onto them, and they're off grid for weeks.
Right. And so, yeah, I mean, that's where we came with this committee. And I think this committee did a great job. And like I said before, I am so proud to be with HHO bringing in EMTs and firefighters, or EMTs and above. So, yeah.
No, yeah, it was a very active group. We had a lot of conversations, you know, and there's a lot of preparation and milestones we wanted to meet. You know, it wasn't just, hey, we're going to shoot from the hip and move forward. You know, it was a lot of discussion. You know, some of the milestones that we've had set too was to create a press release regarding the change, the adaptation that we have, and the inclusion of fire and EMT. That press release was made with some FAQs, frequently asked questions to help explain to individuals what this means for HHO moving forward. What does it change? What stays the same? So that was vetted throughout our committee. And then also we had a all state director meeting where we revealed this information probably a couple weeks ago. And then following that, after we had made any adaptations to the press release or FAQs, we did that with all of our volunteer field staff as well. And just to ensure that we are fine tuning the message, ensuring that we're not missing anything that is going to get pushed out to the public, and just make sure that the mission is going to be fluid. And I'm sure there'll be bumps in the road, but I mean, let's change. When is there not?
With any change or adjustment, there's always going to be bumps in the roads and tons of questions. You know, there's going to be people that are for it, and then there's going to be people that are against it. But I think, you know, looking at the bigger picture, I think this move that we're making is going to be huge, and we're going to be able to help out a ton of different people. I don't have the numbers for EMS in front of me, but I know there's over 1 million active career firefighters in the United States, whether that's the volunteer, paid on call, or paid per call,
and which is isn't a
huge demographic.
Yeah, is it? You guys correct me if I'm wrong. Is it 80% of the fire service is volunteer, or is it more?
So it's here on the U.S. Fire Academy, there's 34% career firefighters and 53% volunteer, with 12 remaining being paid per call.
So okay,
volunteer per or volunteer, but then paid whenever they do work those hours.
So that's still pushing up to, you know, a little over 70, right? Between the two. So yeah, I mean it's a big move forward, you know. I'm sure we'll get some resistance, and I'm sure we'll get a lot of questions about other professions, and it does not mean that we do not respect the other first responders, you know, to include corrections, dispatchers, or other types of professions. It's just a step at this time, and we have to take baby steps and ensure that we have this mission put together well to ensure that everybody is included and that we are adjusted to where we need to be. And then like the FAQs say, you know, we can always address additional professions at a different time, but also it took us, you know, full 4 years to get to this point, you know, and not saying it's going to take us four years. It may take us more, it may take us less. I don't know. But at this point, our focus is here, fire and EMS.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing for people to realize is, you know, as we expand, you know, especially, you know, moving kind of things towards our website a little bit more, getting off of posting on Facebook for our trips, you know, it takes us vetting those individuals. So we're not just, we're making sure that we're letting the right people in. And then, you know, we might down the road, we might have to adjust how we verify people are actually in the fire, EMS, military, and law enforcement based off of the documents that we see coming in.
And so that was part of our working group, was what do we need or require from individuals to be part of these trips and to be vetted. You know, through our website, they have to submit documents in order to become a member of the website, you know, and part of that with both fire and EMS is to be able to submit your qualifications or your training that you've been through. You know, if you have a department identification for some reason, some places do, some places don't. Potentially a letter of good standing from a fire chief or, you know, someone in the EMS industry who might be a supervisor. That takes extra effort and work. You know, we have to review those one by one and ensure that, you know, we're right, letting in the people who are in good standing. You know, yeah. And to note, this also includes people who retire, you know, in time. You know, and we understand that not everyone is 100% made their full career that way because of something that might have been through, traumatic or physically can't anymore. You know, and those individuals are still eligible.
Yeah, it's not people that left because, you know, they got fired for bad conduct or anything. There are people that left because they experienced a traumatic thing and couldn't, you know, they just couldn't deal with that environment anymore, which is things that you see in law enforcement, military, you know, every day.
And Les and Tyler, you know, the biggest reason we leaned on them too is because they do experience that in their full-time life, you know, and I'm not a firefighter. I don't do EMS. Man, I haven't been EMR in 10 years. You know, so my medical training, you know, it's pretty basic, you know. So we wanted to ensure that we had a dynamic group that was a diverse group from across the U.S. and also individuals who serve in the fire service and EMS world.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note too, for, you know, those supporters that we've had, you know, over the last 5 years, you know, the support that you've given us has been amazing. And the best way to think about it, you know, if you're debating whether or not, hey, because they're expanding into different categories, do we want to continue this? I think the biggest thing is to remember you're helping out, you know, the support that you give HHO has the potential to reach a million plus more people. So stay on board with us. Be ready for the amazing things that happen and the
ask questions.
You know, ask questions, and then, you know, the experiences that we post, you know, the testimonials and everything like that are going to get, you know, nothing but better as time goes on from a more diverse group of people.
Les or Tyler, do you guys have anything else you want to add?
you know, like I mentioned earlier, I'm so glad we're adding fire and EMS. And, you know, if you think about it, when you're on the interstate and you drive by an accident scene, you see all three services there. You see EMS, you see fire, and you see law enforcement. And my bio is on the, and I think contact information is on the webpage too, that the new members for fire and EMS, I mean, if you guys need to talk, get a hold of me. I'd be more than willing to sit down and just chat with you.
And you guys know as well as us, you know, we're a vehicle, you know, to help people with the outdoors in order to create those relationships and help with mental health issues, have people to reach out dark times. You know, we have individuals with our applied suicide intervention skills training, our assist training. It's 2 days. You know, these individuals are available to you for assistance too. So when you come into our community, you know, and you meet these individuals, it's going to be very beneficial, not only for your own sake, but you might be very beneficial to somebody else who's already there, maybe have something similar in experience, but you're going to create a new bond with other individuals. So,
yeah. And I think, you know, the biggest thing, especially with, you know, fire and EMS, you know, coming into this, I saw, you know, when we first started, the law enforcement was kind of hesitant, and Chris might be able to expand on that a little bit more. You know, so as these new people come in and they're hesitant to reach out or join a trip, Lester Tyler, do you have any words of wisdom, or, you know, because Les's story is pretty awesome, finding us on YouTube. Is there anything that you guys would say to those people that are first coming in and haven't been on a trip with us, or, you know, just heard about us after the expansion, to get out and interact, you know, whether that's on the Facebook groups or getting on a trip?
Yeah. Well, one, first, welcome. Two, check the website late January. If you want to come out ice fishing in North Dakota, we're doing our annual wheelhouse trip. A takeaway from this is I was pulling my ice house out to go fishing one weekend with my kids, and I had an HHO sticker on the back of my truck, and a NDSU officer, North Dakota State University police officer, flagged me down and said, "Hey, I see your sticker. Are you part of HHO?" It's like, "No, yeah, of course. I got it on my truck." He's like, "Well, I'm a member too." And so, never met the guy before. We put the ice houses next to each other, and we had the best weekend. So, fire, EMS, welcome. We love you. If you see one of our stickers as a field staff member, just hit us up and wave, and yeah, we'll hook you up.
Les, any other words of advice?
I would just say, for anybody that wants to know more about us, do the research. We're on Facebook and then on our webpage. And don't hesitate. Come on these trips. See what we're all about. See it for yourself. And then if you have a good time, pass the word on. I mean, that's what we're all about, trying to get more and more people out. And I think when we get the fire service and EMS and the wildland going, this is going to make this HHO is going to be huge. And there's going to be a lot more opportunities to come out there. So it'll be great.
I like it. And then Chris, have you got anything, you know, from the law enforcement side, you seen it from, you know, 5 years ago when we started, the law enforcement being hesitant, and, you know, that might be a thing that happens with the fire and EMS expansion.
Yeah. You know, and I can't speak to fire EMS obviously, but with law enforcement, you know, usually when, you know, law enforcement, we have a hard time poking our heads out, and, you know, and, we're very reserved when it comes to doing things with others and outside of our groups and people that we know. And when something seems too good to be true, probably because it is. So getting law enforcement to actually get on board and engage with our missions has taken time. It's been an uphill battle, essentially, with, you know, getting more law enforcement involved. But over the time, you know, individuals see that there's no hidden agenda or, "Hey, you need to do this for me, or I'm going to hold it over your head," type of thing. And then also realizing that we do have law enforcement on volunteer staff and people that do engage in on our trips that are also law enforcement, and other law enforcement donating, you know, stuff to us. It's really starting to expand things and make people more comfortable who are in the law enforcement profession. And I mean, it's still, growing, you know, without in different states. You know, in Minnesota, it's taken, like we said, about 4 years, and people are starting to get more comfortable in the law enforcement profession to be able to hop on board and enjoy these things, but they deserve it just as much as anybody else does, you know, anyone that we serve. So, you know, if you're law enforcement, you know, that you have been involved with our stuff, share your stories, you know, share what you've been through, what you've experienced, and get other law enforcement on board. And then also reach out to your military friends, fire and EMS, and let them know what's going on now.
Yeah. And, you know, this expansion is going to be pretty phenomenal. I think, you know, it's going to add a different layer for what we do. I'm certainly looking forward to, you know, getting out on trips with the fire and EMS side, you know, having never really interacted with law enforcement too much before we started HHO. And now, you know, having a full understanding of what they do, I'm looking forward to, you know, the same interactions with law or with firefighters and EMS, and hearing the stories, hearing how they connect with different members, and seeing the life-changing impacts that the organization and then our members have on each other.
Yeah, and to anyone who is just, you know, listening to this podcast, you know, today is October 7th. It is the beginning of our fifth year. You know, I can't say thank you enough to all of our volunteers who have helped us get to this point, people who are taking time out of their day, out of their full-time jobs, their families, and actually helping get people into the outdoors and help with their mental health is significant. We can't do it without the volunteers at all. So going back to our working group and individuals and our board, you know, to help make this whole come to fruition, you know, I want to thank Les and Tyler immensely, you know, for your service and what you guys have done and the information you've provided. But today is a day of celebration going into our fifth year, and I'm excited. And I thank you guys very, very much for your help and assistance up to this point.
Yeah, it's gonna be amazing, and couldn't do, you know, get as far as we did in the expansion without Les and Tyler, for sure. You know, these guys provided quite a bit during the working group chat. So we appreciate you guys, and we appreciate you guys spending the hour or so coming on with us tonight to help discuss it a little bit further as we announce the expansion.
Been my pleasure.
Yep, definitely. Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, we appreciate you guys. And then we're looking forward to seeing the influx of firefighters and EMS joining the Facebook group and hopping on our website. And then, you know, here shortly getting on some trips with us and interacting with all of our members. So, Chris, anything to add before we close this out tonight?
No. Welcome, everyone. Thank you. Thank you to the board. Thank you to our volunteers. Thank you to our supporters, people who donate, everything. You guys, we can't do any of this without you. And thanks for the faith in what we do.
It's been a fun 4 years so far as we enter into our fifth year anniversary. Everyone that supported us, we thank you. And if you guys have any questions about, you know, how we're doing things and this expansion, feel free to reach out to us, and we'll be glad to answer those. And until next time, we'll see you guys out on the water and in the woods.
Thank you for listening to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. For more information about Hometown Hero Outdoors, visit our webpage at www.hometownherooutdoors.org.